Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 138, Mind Mentor, the NLP Robotherapist, February 15th, 2008. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
The central personality is basically an NLP therapist, very supportive, very positive, very sponsoring, you know, very loving, with lots of positive suggestions, guiding you through an NLP process. That is then the projective element, and the provocative element are more or less added to that.
That was the voice of my guest, Dr. Jaap Hollander, describing Mind Mentor, an online robotic therapist using artificial intelligence. Jaap Hollander, PhD, is co-founder of the Institute for Eclectic Psychology, Holland's oldest and largest NLP institute. He introduced neuro-linguistic programming, or NLP, provocative coaching, and symbolic modeling in Holland. He developed Mind Mentor, the robot psychologist, together with his colleague, Dr. Jeffrey Vinberg. Hollander and Vinberg performed a test run with 1,600 clients from all over the world. Results showed that Mind Mentor, which incorporates principles from NLP, was able to reduce average problem severity by 47% in just one session, a score, they point out, that any real-life psychologist would be proud of. Dr. Hollander is the author of 6 books on psychological subjects, ranging from NLP and provocative therapy to modeling trance rituals in Brazil. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Jaap Hollander, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, thank you, David. I'm very happy to be here. Well, and it's a great honor to be interviewed by you.
Oh, thank you very much. Now, you and your colleague, Dr. Jeffrey Vinberg, have developed an online artificial intelligence therapist, which you refer to as Mind Mentor, the robot psychologist. But before we get into that, and that will be a major focus of our discussion, but let's start out with a bit about your professional background.
Yes, I'm a clinical psychologist, just like Jeffrey. And so I've been working originally in psychiatry a lot. And so in the late 80s, when neuro-linguistic programming became popular, I developed a lot in that. So right now I'm doing a lot of teaching, training in neuro-linguistic programming, symbol work, stuff like that.
Okay, you actually
I have a training institute here in Holland, which was actually the first NLP institute. So I could probably say the major NLP institute here in Holland.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, how did you first come to be exposed to NLP, which, just in case anybody is listening and doesn't know what we're talking about, NLP stands for neuro-linguistic programming. How did you first get exposed to that?
Yes, well, I had some interns as a psychologist when I was still working in psychiatry. I always had 4 interns, and some of them suddenly came up with this book that they were very enthusiastic about. It, I think, it was called The Structure of Magic,
right,
by Bendler and Grinder.
I have it on my bookshelf right here.
Right, so I started reading it, and it happened that just around that time, I think it was in 1981, I went to the first conference on Ericksonian hypnosis, mm-hmm, somewhere in, it was in Phoenix, actually, Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, yes.
And there, when I was there, I found some brochures and said, oh, wow, so some people are actually doing this. So I visited them and talked to them and invited them to come teach in Holland, and that's how I got started in NLP. Well, I was already I was already doing a lot of Ericksonian hypnosis by that time.
Well, that's great. You and I share that in common. I was also very much I was very much influenced by the work of Milton Erickson, and I took one of the first workshops I think that Bandler and Grinder offered in Santa Cruz. I don't remember what year that was, but I know it was a long time ago.
yeah, it must have been around that time.
Yes. Well, so then you teamed up with your colleague, friend, Jeffrey, and you two came up with this program that integrates, I guess, some of the key elements of neuro-linguistic programming into a kind of automated therapist, if you will. Now, let me ask you, were the two of you familiar with ELISA, which, you know, is similar, but it works on a more of a Rogerian premise rather than NLP?
Yes, we're familiar with that. It's ELISA. That program has been around for a long, long time.
Yes, it has.
Maybe as long as 15, 20 years, I think.
That's right. So what made the two of you decide to take another pass at it, if you...
ELISA is a system that tries to more or less analyze, you know, whatever you say, and then, you know, respond back to have you clarify some of your ideas. What we realize is that there, for instance, in NLP, but also in all kinds of different psychological approaches, there often are protocols or techniques or, you know, procedures that guide the client through a series of steps.
Yeah,
and so we thought, well, maybe it's possible to have a computer program lead somebody through a series of steps like that, because basically what these steps do is that they're like Bandler and Grinder used to say, they're content free. They're process steps that can be applied to any content. So the computer would not even have to analyze any content. It could just guide somebody through those steps. So we and what was interesting for us is that we realized if we could do that, if we could make something like that, then we would basically have an unlimited supply of psychological help.
Yes. Go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah. No, go ahead.
The difficulty here is we can't see one another, so there's no way to give a nonverbal cue of, okay, now I'm about to say something, now you're about to say something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was for us the the excitement, really. And at first, we didn't even really know if it could be done. So, but we did realize that if we could make something like that, that would be maybe not as good as a real life psychologist, even though also, of course, in some cases better. But even if it wasn't as good as a life psychologist, it would be available always for everybody in unlimited supply. So that was a very exciting idea. So one evening we sat down at the kitchen table, and I have some experience in computer programming, so I played the computer sort of saying things that I thought a computer might be able to generate, and Jeffrey played the client, and suddenly we realized we could get real far that way. So we had a programmer program a sort of a prototype, and then by the end of 2006, we had 1,500 or 1,600 people come in and do that mind mentor process. And then after they finish their, you've probably seen that yourself. After you finish it, he asks, how long do you want to work with this solution? And then, for instance, you say 2 weeks or a day or a month. And then after that, he sends you an email and says, well, hello, David, you worked on a problem. To what extent do you now feel this problem has been solved? 0%, it's totally unsolved, 100%, it's totally solved. And with that, we got 47%. So that was, we thought that was amazing.
47% said, what, after the first session that they felt that it had been solved, or after multiple sessions?
No, after one session, not 47% said it had been solved, but the average person said it had been solved for 47%. So they only experienced half of their problem, basically.
Oh, I see. Oh, I misunderstood when I read that on the web.
Yeah, most people think that, Mind Mentor solves 47% of the problems. Well, in a sense, he does, but the exact formulation is that if you ask people for how many percent has a problem been solved, then that's 47.
Okay.
So we were excited because, 47%, that's a lot. I mean, after one session, that we thought that was amazing. So that really motivated us to go on. So we, for a year, we spent a lot of time, having other people program it, basically, and make the illustrations and everything. And so now, just in last December, we were online again.
Yes. And now, and maybe this wasn't the case when you first did it, there are three components or three therapist personalities that appear. One I would call Mind Mentor. I don't know if that's what he's called. And then there's Robo Rorschach and Provo Bot. So maybe you
yes,
talk
exactly.
a bit about those and what the rationale for each of those is.
Yes. Well, we thought that our first prototype was lacking a bit in depth, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to bring in, not surprisingly from an Ericksonian point of view, we like to bring in some unconscious process. So we looked into projective testing. I've always been a great fan of projective testing, by the way.
Okay.
And so the Robo Rorschach, which is, of course, named after Hermann Rorschach of the famous Rorschach test, shows pictures, and then you have to associate sort of, not totally free associate, but to associate from your problem space, so to speak, on these pictures and make a story out of your associations in order to bring to the surface some unconscious information in the beginning about your problem and in the end about your solution.
Yes, I noticed that and I like that feature. And so talk a little bit about there's the primary personality, which is that personality called Mind Mentor, or does he have a different name?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that's Mind Mentor, yes.
Yeah, he's therapist number one. And then he calls in these other two consultants. One is Robo Rorschach, and the other is Provobot. Say something about Provobot.
Well, Provobot is a very American personality, I could say, because he's based on a teacher of ours called Frank Farrelly from Madison, the founder of provocative therapy. I don't know if you've ever heard about him.
I did not know of his work, but I saw a link on your website, and so I followed the link, and I saw a number of principles listed there relating to provocative therapy. Now, is that also a spinoff of the Ericksonian approach? It looked like it might be.
No, not really. Frank Farrelly used to work in psychiatry a lot, and it's really an interesting story in itself. Provocative therapy is becoming pretty popular here in Holland, and it has an American basis in the person of Frank Farrelly, who thought it up, who developed it for 40 years. It's very, very good at it. It's a great teacher in it too. But he's virtually unknown in the United States, which is a funny thing, really. But the essence of provocative therapy is that you know, if you want the donkey to move forward, you have to pull its tail.
I've never had to move a donkey, so I don't know if that's true or not.
No, well, I don't either, but that's the myth, right?
Okay.
But so what you do in provocative therapy, and of course this is a very limited rendering of it, but what you do in provocative therapy basically is that you say to people on a conscious verbal level that they're suckers, that they're not okay, they will never amount to anything, that they're stupid, while at the same time, at the nonverbal, more unconscious level, you send out messages of, you know, acceptance and love. And this can be very, very stimulating for people. They start to defend themselves. So we, and also in Mind Mentor, we try to put that element in the form of Provobots.
Yes, I remember Provobot coming on the scene and mocking my solution.
Yes, right. It's the most stupid solution I ever heard.
Right. But it makes it more lively and more interesting, I must say.
Yeah, and people respond to different things, and you know, some people don't hardly respond to Provobot at all, but some people respond very strongly to Provobot, which is also, I think, some indication of how how interesting that whole system of provocative therapy is, because it's just a computer program, you know, but some people, you know, are really sitting there. I was talking to a journalist the other day, and she was really going, well, I'll show that stupid Provobot, you know, and yeah. You can really sort of feel the emotion while it's just a picture on the screen, but it can have real interesting psychological effects.
I saw that very phenomenon acted out by a guy who was almost my brother-in-law some years back, who was interacting. We had a version of Eliza, I don't know if you ever saw it, that was sort of an insult machine, so that whatever you said to it, it would kind of turn it back on you as an insult, you know, may a camel go up your nose and things like that. And this fellow, he took it so personally, he was swearing at the computer, and he was in this battle with the computer. It was fun to watch. It was funny.
Yes. Yeah, so in provocative therapy, and also to a very minor extent in Mind Mentor, we are trying to harness basically that energy for positive change.
Now, how would you describe the central personality, Mind Mentor?
Well, that's the central personality is basically an NLP therapist, very supportive, very positive, very sponsoring, you know, very loving, with lots of positive suggestions, guiding you through an NLP process.
Okay.
And to that is then the projective element and the provocative element are more or less added to that.
Now, one of the things that I think really helps to make this work, and it's definitely a step beyond what Eliza did, is your use of graphical representations of each of these personalities. There are these cute little cartoon robot figures. How did you get the idea for this?
What I did was take a robot picture that was in some, you know, some 3D system called Poser, and had that modified a lot. And then I gave this designer a photograph of Sigmund Freud and said, I want those glasses and that beard on him. Uh-huh. So it took quite a while before I finally had that organized. Oi, oi. That was my son leaving for the fitness center.
Oh, okay.
But so the reason why I wanted to have a robot is to have sort of a constant reminder that this is a mechanical personality. This is not a life psychologist sitting behind the computer, but this is a mechanical, electronical
You felt people
the entity.
You felt people needed to be reminded of that they would maybe lose track?
I don't know. I thought it was a good idea to write from the beginning in that symbolization to underline that in a subtle way.
Yes.
And also, I thought it was very funny.
It is. And I like that little bit of a humorous touch. I mean, in a way, it touches a similar place as Provobot does, you know, just giving it that little underlying touch of humor, which I think is good when people come in with some kind of a heavy problem. It doesn't hurt to lighten things up a little bit, I think.
No, I think humor is a very healing force.
Yes. Yes. You know, I'm not sure that there are two things I want to say to our listeners. One is Jaap is in Holland and I'm in the U.S. and we didn't say that because we have such a good connection here. People might not know. Skype seems to be giving us a really clear connection and it's just like you're in the room next door.
It's really amazing.
Yeah, the other thing I want to suggest to listeners is that they really should go and try this out. This conversation that we're having might have a lot more meaning for you if you were to actually experience Mind Mentor, which you can find at www.mindmentor.com, right?
Mm, exactly.
And it's very reasonably priced, I must say. It's €495. That's not €495. There are therapists who would probably charge that much for a single session, but we're talking, you know, like what I would call $4.95. How do you say that in euros?
€4.95.
Oh, okay, good. So it's very reasonably priced, and I would encourage listeners to do as I did, which was to try to get in touch with a real issue. I figured if I'm going to give it a fair test, I really ought to come up with something that's genuine for myself. So I did, and I'll talk a bit about that with listeners after the interview, but I just want to encourage listeners to do that. So let's have you talk about what sorts of problems do you think Mind Mentor is good for? And what sorts may be not so good for?
People have asked that question a lot, and I really find it a little bit difficult to answer because basically I think it is good for all problems to talk to Mind Mentor about it. But on the other hand, that sounds a little vague and a little, you know, maybe arrogant. So I could say, you know, it's very unlikely, let me put it like that, that Mind Mentor will solve very severe problems like, you know, severe depression, you know, multiple personality, hard drug addiction, psychosis, schizophrenia, problems like that. And it also says on the site that, you know, you absolutely need to find more extensive treatment for that. And so even though these people suffering from these problems might still get some benefit from Mind Mentor, but here, you know, a problem can be that, you know, if people think, well, now I'm doing this rather instead of, you know, finding a real psychologist or a real psychiatrist, that would be really a pity because that's not what it's meant for. It's really meant to, you know, to solve the daily problems that people have in their daily life that they can't solve or they keep running up against. Like, for instance, you know, conflicts with colleagues, jealousy, you know, am I doing the right kind of work? My husband has left me, and how do I find a new life? I don't sleep so well, things like that.
Okay, now, you've been talking about NLP as being the underlying theoretical rationale, but we really haven't said much about NLP. So for the person who, let's say, is from another planet and never heard of NLP, what are the key principles that are being utilized here?
Yes. So the major thing that Mind Mentor utilizes is to analyze your thinking and your feeling in a very systematic way, and that way helping you understand, you know, how your thinking leads to certain emotions and certain behaviors. Well, for instance, if I have a colleague that I'm having conflicts with, and I picture this colleague in a certain way, or hear this colleague speaking in a certain way, and also my values, if for instance, I feel that the most important thing in life is that people respect me, then I have a sort of thinking that's very conducive to having more and more conflict and more problems in that area. So some of these elements are under my conscious control. Some of these elements I can picture different things. I can say different things to myself. I can really think about, you know, what are my values and make redecide that to some extent, and that way I can influence basically my model of the world, so I can make a change where I'm not happy with the way things are now.
So part of what's going on is a values clarification process.
Yes, well, it's basically the idea that you have a view on the world, and your worldview, your model of the world, will influence your possibilities and your impossibilities. And by changing the way you see things, basically, you will gain or lose, also possible, but you will gain more possibilities.
Okay. Now, it does, like Eliza, it does depend upon what you've said, and it kind of plays back to you what you've said, although it may position it in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
It, one of the things that I found challenging at times, and I can see both positives and negatives around this, is that it would insist that I express some of my ideas in 8 words or less.
Yes.
Maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
Yes,
but
well,
you only have 8 words.
Yeah, okay.
I'm kidding.
I'll take it. But I'll have to count at the same time as I'm speaking. But I'll count on my fingers. So 8 words is good for being very precise.
Yes, it does force one to be explicit and clear about what they're saying. That's what I see as the positive thing. At the same time, it can be a little frustrating when you want to say more than that.
Yes, it is. Well, see, there's also a technical reason for these 8 words, is that Mind Mentor uses what you have said in later formulations. So if you have something, let's say 25 words, I mean, of course, it's no problem at all to have people type in if they like 1,000 words, but how is he going to use that in the next in the rest of the process?
Sure.
So there, so you could, I don't know. We're still thinking about that, because we've had that comment a lot. People say, well, there's 8 words and, you know, I can't really express myself, and now finally I want to talk about my problem. I can only use 8 words. And of course, that's also different for different people, but some people really respond very frustrated to that. And so we've been thinking, well, maybe, you know, let people speak as long as they like, and then, you know, have them summarize it.
And that's kind of how it's set up now. I should add that there were places where I could type in much more than 8 words, but then the program would come back and kind of say, you know, now what's the essence of this?
Yeah,
in
right.
8 words. And
So it's still a little bit like you have this whole story and it goes like, eight words. So we need to soften that process a little. So, well, it's great that you're telling me all this, and I'm very curious how you might, you know, put this into, you know, a tight formulation. We don't see the reason why we haven't done that yet is that it's sort of, you know, a little bit, how do you say, it seems a little fraudulent to, you know, have people type in all this text and then not do anything with it, not analyze it or whatever. So we're still thinking about that, how we, you know, what we can do about that. Our first step is to sort of explain more why, you know, to have different screens explaining why a mind mentor wants it in eight words.
Well, I wonder if in the future, if you were to collaborate with, and I'm just thinking out loud here, but if you were to collaborate with someone who really is trained in, you know, in artificial intelligence, I'm assuming that there are advances being made in the ability to parse natural language and derive meaning. I know that's a big challenge for the whole artificial intelligence enterprise. But I think there's some progress that's been made, and perhaps by teaming up with, you know, with a doctoral student in that area or a recent graduate, maybe there could be some forward strides. What do you think?
Yes, well, I'm certainly interested in that. Although I have to say that about 8 years ago, we had a project a little bit similar to Mind Mentor, and that worked with language analysis. And after 2 years, basically, we gave it up because, you know, we just couldn't do it. So one of the strengths of Mind Mentor sounds very strange, maybe, but one of the strengths of Mind Mentor is that he doesn't do any language analysis, so he doesn't have all these problems that that are associated with natural language analysis. But certainly, if there's new insights and new procedures or whatever, we are more than excited to look into those.
Do you have any plans for improving it? What sorts of improvements do you foresee,
yes,
if any?
Well, basically, I think Mind Mentor has been a great hobby of mine, so to speak. And Jeffrey's also very excited about it. And so sometimes we have these wonderful results and wonderful responses of people that really stimulate us to go on. So I think it's going to be a life work. So we have a whole notebook with at least 100 different things that we might still add to it. Of course, we'll add many different procedures, and you know, everything that's in it now will be multiplied in different forms, so it will be different every time eventually. But also, what I find very interesting is so say, if, for instance, we have a couple of thousand people or who have had good results, is also eventually to have different users communicate with each other. So that would be something like, now you would have a certain problem. Everybody works in English, so we can, you know, easily analyze some content, or at least we're not, you know, hindered by the fact that everybody uses different languages. And then, for instance, so he knows the problem and he knows the percentage it is solved. So he could start saying, for instance, well, hey, David, you had this problem with this and that, and you solved it only for 30%. But I have this, you know, I spoke to this accountant in Kuala Lumpur, and he had a similar problem. At least maybe you can check for me whether you think that's a similar problem. I think it is, but you have to check that, of course. And he solved it for 90%. So maybe you would like to speak to him about that. And then somehow connect people that way.
That's a very interesting idea. Yes.
Yes, and so that's one thing. And then, of course, there's the whole issue of, well, like you said, the whole, if anything comes up in natural language recognition, that would be interesting.
Yes.
Although, personally, I'm, you know, even the last time I looked at it, which is about, you know, 8 years ago, it was still a long way off from what we would need. But then, of course, there's a lot of personalizations also can be done. You know, some people are more, you know, more global thinkers, some are more specific, some are more motivated by problems, and others are more motivated by goals. Some people think very procedural, other people think very much in terms of options. So eventually we might have Mind Mentor sort of adapt to the user, to the thinking style of the user, and have him present his information in a way that, you know, appeals to that particular thinking style.
Yes, I remember Bandler and Grinder years ago, and I don't know if NLP has stuck with this idea or not, but they talked about visual thinking styles and auditory thinking styles and so on. For example, that a visual person might say, "I see what you mean," and an auditory person might say, "I hear you." And so it's conceivable that your software could be scanning for those types of words and then creating replies that would reply in that same modality.
Yes. And we also have a test here in Holland that we developed over the last 10 years that measures a lot of these things. It's called Meta Profile Analysis. Well, it's only available in Dutch and German and French right now. But we're working on an English version too, and so it's all validated and, you know, reliable and everything. And so we're already measuring that. Mm. So we're thinking maybe have a simplified version of that built into Mind Mentor.
Oh, yes. That sounds like a good idea. Now, what's been the reaction of your colleagues in the psychotherapeutic professional world?
Well, there have been, first of all, there have been surprisingly few reactions. And then some of them have been very enthusiastic, and some of them have been very, very critical of Mind Mentor.
Well,
so the enthusiasm is about the, you know, the fact that he's always available, and often, you know, people, our colleagues start very skeptical, and then once they do, they say, "Oh, this is not so bad. This is really interesting." But there's also some people, although I must say that I think, as far as I can tell, they only looked at the first two screens, but say, "Well, this is rubbish. This is ridiculous," you know, but most. Mostly, I think they haven't really tried it. Mm-hmm. They just respond to the whole concept of a computer program working with people.
Yeah, some people would find that offensive right out of
exactly.
the box. Yeah.
Just the whole idea is offensive to them. And then some of these people that have been most critical about that are people who also have their own system of internet therapy, which, I don't know, it's about 300 times as expensive and 24,000 times as slow. So that doesn't really make for much enthusiasm, I think.
Yeah.
But even apart from that, even if people would not have that system, I think they could still be critical of that. It's sort of like, you know, an insult to, you know, talk about your problems to a computer program.
Yes. Well, as we wind down here, I wonder if you have any final thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners with.
Final thoughts? Yes, well, go see Mind Mentor if you have a problem and give him a spin.
Okay, well, Dr. Jaap Hollander, thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Okay, Dr. Dave van Nuys, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk about this. And it's been a great honor to be on Shrink Wrap Radio. And, I hope to be talking to you again in the future, and I'll certainly be downloading a lot of information from your site.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with NLP therapist Dr. Jaap Hollander. As you heard me mention in the interview, I did give Mind Mentor a try on my own. I may have been a little skeptical about its value, but I decided I should approach it with as open an attitude as possible, and that to be fair, I should present a real issue. So as it happened, I was feeling a bit down, depressed, pessimistic, tired, old, and creaky. So that's what I presented. And Mind Mentor echoed some of this back to me and led me through a process of narrowing it down and getting to the heart of the problem. It's been a while now since I did it, so I don't remember the whole process in great detail, but I think it also prompted me to recall a past situation in which I had those same feelings. I think it asked me what the opposite of those feelings would be for me. At some point, I think it asked me to recall a situation in which I was feeling the opposite sorts of feelings. At some point, Robo Rorschach came on the scene and showed me some images and asked me to identify in what ways those images might express what I had been feeling. And then at some point, I think it showed me images and asked me to identify in what ways these new images might connect to good feelings I had experienced in the past. I was asked to imagine what I could do to bring back those good feelings. Somewhere around that point, I think I was returned to the main Mind Mentor personality to discuss my proposed solution. And at some point, Provo Robot came on the scene and provocatively challenged my proposed solution. Well, I don't want to give the whole sequence away, and I'm not sure I even have remembered it correctly here. The key thing is that, for one thing, the cartoon representations of the three robot therapist personalities tickled me at some level, and I actually had some fun going through all this with them. And by the time the session was over, I was smiling and my spirits had picked up, and I was feeling optimistic and that I knew what I needed to do to keep myself in better spirits. So my assessment is that this can be a useful tool for everyday run-of-the-mill sorts of issues. I think it could be used as an adjunct in personal therapy sessions. I don't think it would be a complete substitute for personal psychotherapy, though, to treat long-standing or severe problems. But at €4.95, what have you got to lose? It certainly won't do any harm. You might want to check it out. Let me know what you think if you do.
That's right. Shrink Wrap Radio. Coming at you now. Yo, everybody, let's get down. There's a new MC in town. Talking psychology interviews. Dr. Dave is on the rave. Ain't no slouch on the digital couch. He's on the pod. Podcast got the pod. Yeah. You want to be in the know? No. Talking Shrink Wrap Radio. Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. I'm talking Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. I'm talking Shrink Wrap Radio. Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. All right.
Hey, I'm very excited to report that as of this moment, the Shrink Wrap Radio logo is featured right on the first podcast page in iTunes. I don't know how long it'll be up there. If you miss it, I've captured a photo of it, and you'll find it on our Shrink Wrap Radio website under the In the Media menu item. As I say, I'm not sure how long it will be up, but it's thrilling when this happens. You'll see that we're in the center of the page, right beneath NPR and next to the BBC. Now, they each have budgets of millions of dollars and professional staffs, so you can see why I'm so thrilled working as a single individual from a home office to get this level of attention. Especially when you consider that a figure I've heard is that there are 125,000 podcasts. Now, I don't know if that refers to shows or episodes, but either way, that's a lot of competition. And this is the second time we've been featured on the iTunes page. The other time it was not so prominently. It was in an area at the top of the page that cycles through a series of shows every few seconds. This time, we have very prominent billing smack dab in the center of the page. And of course, it wouldn't happen without the support of loyal listeners who have gone to the trouble of posting such positive reviews on the iTunes site. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Other than the overall quality of the show, I think it's your endorsements on the iTunes site that helps us to get featured there. And as a result of this placement, it looks like our numbers have already jumped up by about 100 new subscribers. So once again, thank you, thank you, thank you. As I've mentioned before, I'm going to be in Barcelona in early May, and I would love to meet one or more of you there. If you are in or around Barcelona, maybe we could get together for a coffee. We could meet. Maybe you could give me some tourist tips or show me around a bit if you're a native to that area. So I'd love to hear from somebody in or around Barcelona. By the way, if you are a new listener who's discovered the show as a result of this placement on the front page at iTunes, drop me a line and let me know. Let me know what you think of what you've discovered here. You can reach me, shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. And you can also add yourself to our Frapper map, and you'll find a link to that on the website as well. It's now a day later, and we are still featured on the front podcast page of iTunes, and it looks like we're up about 200 subscribers as a result. Also, I don't know if I mentioned it, but we're also number 9 in the higher education category on iTunes. I noticed the number 8 show is about psychology. I'll have to check it out. It may be that they just made a smarter choice in the name they chose for it on iTunes, which is simply Psychology Podcast. I'm continuing to be fascinated by the new dramatic series on HBO titled In Treatment. I love the way that the therapist is so good at seeing into his patients and dealing with their resistance and so blind to his own issues, and the way that his resistance is so similar to theirs. I have to say, this strikes me as just how it is in real life. It's so much easier to see other people's defensive strategies than to see our own. The sponsors for this show are Podshow and GoDaddy. Thanks to all of you who have bought domain names and such at GoDaddy and use the discount codes that you can find on our Shrink Wrap Radio website. Those discounted purchases also help to support this show.
Hi, this is Art Cervantes from the San Francisco Apple Store, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Now, if you're a new listener, I should tell you that we've come to the place in the show where each week I read listener emails. These emails mean a lot to me, and I could just keep them to myself, but I share them in the spirit of creating a community of like-minded souls here. I believe we all want our voices to be heard, and I know that most people who've written me have been tickled to hear their words on the air. Now, the first one comes from the listener known as Powder Skier, who's written before and who writes, "Dr. Dave, just writing in to say, keep up the good work. I'm continually impressed at the quality of the show and most of the guests. Same goes for Wise Counsel. Let's see, seems like you've asked for listener feedback on stuff, but I don't remember them all. I'm still back on podcasts from December, but the hip-hop theme song isn't annoying or off-putting to me. I'm in my early 30s, male, white, upper middle class, or used to be, now I'm broke, and went to high school in a racially mixed environment. I listen to the show mostly when I'm driving to do something enjoyable, ski or vacation of some sort. In the summer, I listen while driving to mountain bike or while riding uphill. Around 45 minutes seems to be best. I can hear a full show and there's enough time to get some meat in there. However, I don't have to come back and finish a show after I've lost the train of thought. I'm forgetting lots, but just wanted to write and say hi. My favorite shows have ideas and examples of how people can live their lives better, along with the reasoning behind that stuff. I'm not as interested in the technicalities of different treatment strategies, but I'm sure some are. That said, I still remember and value the What Works show that says any school of thought can work given the right ingredients. I'm not a psychology professional or a student. Thanks again." Well, that show that you're referring to about What Works remains as one of my favorite shows, too. You are referring to show number 66 with Scott D. Miller, What Really Works in Therapy. That is a really good show. It's definitely one of my favorites. And you're talking about skiing and mountain biking, and I used to be a very big mountain biker and big skier, and I'm hoping to go skiing at the end of this month, actually, in Park City, Utah, if the trip comes off. But I'm definitely a half-day skier at this point. The next email reads, "Hi, David. I would like to share with you a small point regarding the episode on sign language for kids, which I had the pleasure to listen to while running in the forest this morning." Doesn't that sound idyllic? This is from Rafal in Poland, by the way. So there's Rafal running in the forest in Poland, listening to Shrink Wrap Radio. And he goes on to say, "You and Nancy made a lot of very good comments on the positive aspects of kids' development coming from this practice, that is, of teaching them sign language as children, with which I agree and must say even more strongly advocate. There was also a mention on the deeper bonding between kids and parents in later years, which has got me started to thinking. This point made me think, and I must say that I've not been able to agree on the connection you made here, if anything, for the sheer fact of the possible bias and relatively short time span. And here is the point I want to share with you. The practice of teaching and using sign language has great benefits for the parents." Okay, so it's beneficial not just to the kids, but to the parents. He goes on to say, "This allows them to build a more meaningful bond with the kid via meaningful interaction, decrease the frustration which is caused by the inability to understand why the kid cries." Have you noticed that many young parents frequently use the expression, I don't know why the hell he, she keeps crying? Creates a broader respect for the young creature, and may also play a role, gives a powerful possibility of feeling like a better parent, since you do actually know why the hell he keeps crying and can do something about this. Thanks again for another great episode, Rafal. Thanks for that, Rafal. It's always great to hear from you, and I love thinking of you listening to Shrink Wrap Radio as you're running through the forest there in Poland. The next one also comes from abroad. "Hi, Dr. Dave. I've been meaning to email you for some time now. In fact, I firmly resolve to do so every morning when on my way to work I tune into one of your podcasts. But once I get into the office, the onslaught of daily tasks overtake me. Nevertheless, here I finally am. The main reason for my email is to say a big thank you for the informative and knowledge-rich podcasts you provide." Thank you. "Please don't ever stop. I'm one of your biggest fans and have told all my colleagues about your pod show. Which reminds me, thanks for the flyer we're now able to download. I've printed it out and pinned it up on our staff notice board, and hopefully this will bring you more listeners." Well, maybe that's where all these new listeners are coming from and not from iTunes. Hey, if you're a new listener, if you go on our website and you look, I think under promos, you'll find flyers that you could print out and post somewhere. She goes on to write, "I also wanted to let you know how much you have inspired me to finally take the leap and do what until just now has been a dream. I currently work as a personal assistant for a global management consulting company. Apart from organizational consulting, we also deal with candidates going through career outplacement when organizations downsize and restructure. I have been with this company for the past 2.5 years, but come March 3rd, I will be embarking on the life of a full-time student. Yippee! I'm doing a Bachelor of Science majoring in psychology. The end goal is yet to be determined, or should I say discovered, and I am so looking forward to the journey. I've been studying psychology along a diploma in career development part-time for the past 5 years and should have at least had my degree by now. But with full-time work, motherhood, and the rest, there is only so much one can do. However, now that I'm becoming a full-time student, my goal of obtaining that elusive degree will be realized. Rest assured, I'll be distributing some more of those flyers to my fellow students. My aim is to bring you at least 2 new listeners from New Zealand. So watch this space." I knew it was international. I'd just forgotten from where. It's New Zealand. And she wraps it up saying, "Well, this was meant to be short email, and I'm starting to ramble. Don't change anything about your shows. They're fantastic." That's all in caps. That's why I give it that verbal emphasis. They're fantastic just the way they are. There's only one complaint that I have, and that is that you've set such a high standard that other podcasts that I've subscribed to fail to inspire and motivate as much as your shows do, and I usually end up disappointed. Well, boy, if you're going to have a complaint, that's the kind of complaint I like. She says, so make sure you keep them coming. Warmest regards, Teresa. Or Teresa. I'm not sure which. But Teresa, thanks so much for that. And good luck with this new direction that you're embarking on. You're cutting the corporate tie and striking out. And I wish you all the best and glad for whatever role I may have played in helping you screw up your courage to do that. The next one is also from abroad, this time from the UK, and it reads, Dear Dr. Dave, thank you so much for all the work you put into both podcasts. I want you to know that they are very much appreciated, even by the many who are out there who, like me until now, don't usually take the time to write. It's a rare podcast where I don't feel that I've gained something, and far more often, I find that you've widened my horizons and I come away richer, better informed, and with food for thought. And who knows, maybe wiser too. I want to specifically thank you and Stephen Schaps for your recent podcast on confronting death. It's brave of you to begin to tackle such a topic. And it was hearing at the end of the podcast on Sand Play that you will be speaking to my hero, Irvin Yalom, that has finally compelled me to write. Now, let me just step out of the email here and make a comment. I have interviewed Irvin Yalom on his latest book, which is about confronting death anxiety. And that interview will be up on my other podcast, which can be found at www.wisecounselpodcast.com. I expect it will be up maybe by the time that you hear this. He goes on to write, I'm a specialist in palliative medicine. Here in the UK, it's recognized as a distinct medical specialty, but this is not the case in the US, I think. And so thinking about the issues that surround dying and death is part and parcel of my everyday working life. What I love about my work is that it combines medicine slash therapeutics with a holistic approach to the dying person, psychological and spiritual concerns, ethical thinking, and the need for sensitivity in communication, not only in discussing prognosis, as you might expect, but also in areas such as talking with family members about what it will actually look like when their loved one is dying. As well, of course, as control of physical symptoms. These psycho-spiritual issues have a realism and an immediacy which is quite different to other medical specialties I have worked in, more akin, if anything, with the process of giving birth, in the sense that there is often an awareness that profound transitions are taking place. Anyway, this is beginning to sound like an advert for the specialty, which it's not. What I'm really trying to come around to is Yalom's influence on my practice. I first came across him in the book Love's Executioner, in which he outlines his existential understanding of the common concerns that often unconsciously underpin humanity. While I don't believe that existentialism has much to offer as a philosophy for living, nevertheless, I do think that people like Rollo May and Yalom have hit on important ideas. An example for me personally is the hero defense against the horror of dying, i.e., if I can rescue someone, then I myself potentially am rescuable. This has direct relevance for me as a physician. I think about why, for instance, do some oncologists continue to give chemotherapy when it's apparent that the patient is nearing the end and that the chemo is futile? What does this mean, and in what areas of my own practice am I susceptible to the same defense process? What are the implications for this on current UK euthanasia debate? Does the fact that I'm drawn to this specialty mean that I'm more or less fearful of my own death? I won't go on, but I'm so glad that you're having Yalom on. Those are all great questions to be asking, by the way. He says, I have a question for you. Given my interest in the psychological issues of those facing death, what's the best training for me to undertake? I'm drawn to Jungian depth psychology, but of course my patients often don't have much time for traditional psychotherapy. I'm about to go on an introductory course for cognitive behavioral therapy and palliative care. I'm sure this will be great and probably really useful, but I also suspect it will be superficial. Am I correct in thinking that CBT is focused much more on symptom control than on growth? Yes, I would imagine that you are correct about that. He says, is there a role for EMDR? Should I be looking toward a process work type training? I look forward to hearing your Yalom interview. I could also do with some advice. Many thanks for your great work, with best wishes. And this is from John, who is a medical specialist in palliative medicine in London. And John, without going into too much great detail here, I have written to you. I'm recommending a book by an author who I'm going to interview in my next podcast, Anna Maria Hemingway, and her book, Practicing Conscious Living and Dying. Just one of many books. Personally, I think that the psycho-spiritual books and trainings probably have the most to offer to you working in this area. I don't have high hopes for either CBT or EMDR, though they may be of some value. I personally would be more inclined to go towards Jungian therapy, which focuses on meaning, as well as, I say, the psycho-spiritual approaches. Also, as I mentioned in my email to you, you sound like you would be a great guest for this show, and contact me if that's of interest to you. Okay, one more here real quick. Dear Dr. Dave, hope all is well. I'm currently teaching philosophy at a junior college in Quebec, Canada. I gave my students an assignment on the marketing and co-modifying of, quotes, cool, and referred them to your insightful podcast episode on the commercialization of childhood. I'm happy to say that several of my students used and cited that episode in their assignment without me telling them they had to. We even discussed the episode in class. Yay, that makes me happy. Keep up the good work. Your podcast continues to be one of the highlights of my week. Your fan and faithful listener, Paul. And then he writes, P.S., I sent you a reggae voice message. Did you get it? And yes, I got it and played it on the last podcast. And as I commented to you in an email, it was hard to understand it all. So I've written to Paul. I've asked him if he would make a shorter and much more understandable and possibly set to music version, and we'll play that one again. So I think that better wrap it up for reading the email today and the show. You can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. You can also leave comments about individual shows right on the website. You can leave voicemails on Skype, where our name is ShrinkPod, or you can use the My Chingo button on our site to leave voicemails, or you can leave a voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622. Thanks again to Dr. Jaap Hollander for sharing his work on Mind Mentor. My next guest, as I mentioned, will be Anna Maria Hemingway, who's written a very inspiring book on practicing conscious living and dying. I hope you'll join us for that show. This is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind. Thank you.